In Q-Force, a ragtag team of queer spies who've been relegated to working out of a West Hollywood garage finally get their shot at the big leagues. No one is happier about this than their leader, who's been overlooked for the past 10 years after coming out publicly upon graduating from spy school. Over 10 half-hour episodes, Q-Force tackles international terrorism, smuggling, brainwashing, and homophobia. There's action, intrigue, suspense, sex, plenty of queer inside jokes and pop culture references, and yes, stereotypes. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about the Netflix animated action comedy series Q-Force on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away. Welcome back. Joining me today is NPR producer Mallory Yu. Hey, Mallory.
Hello, Glenn.
And also with us here is NPR editor Serena Toros. Hey, Serena.
Hey, Glenn.
Good to see you. Q-Force stars Will and Grace's Sean Hayes as Agent Steve Mary Merriweather, a blandly handsome muscle queen driven to succeed. He's joined by Wanda Sykes as Deb, the team's mechanic slash inventor. Patty Harrison is Stat, the resident hacker. Matt Rogers, who also wrote on the show, voices Twink, the team's mistress of disguise slash drag queen. David Harbour shows up as Buck, the egregiously heterosexual agent assigned to monitor the team. And finally, the great and good Laurie Metcalf voices V, Q-Force's sole ally and mentor within their spy agency. Gabe Liedman, who's written for many shows like Broad City, Pen 15, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is the show's creator and showrunner, and certainly the series features a lot of queer folk behind the scenes as producers, writers, and animators, as well as behind the mic. The show's many producers include Hayes and Michael Shore of The Good Place, Parks and Rec, and Rutherford Falls. Some listeners might recall that when the first trailer dropped, it got some level of flack on social media, accusing the show of trafficking in broad stereotypes. So, Mallory, where'd you come down?
So I have to say that the only reason I was interested in the show in the first place is because of the backlash. I was just curious to see what the show would be from that first trailer, which wasn't my cup of tea humor-wise. I was intrigued by the voice cast and kind of by the concept of the show. And I have to say, I laughed quite a bit more than I was expecting to. It's not groundbreaking, but the voice cast is really the draw. I think Wanda Sykes's wife guy mom energy is fantastic. Sean Hayes sounds like he's having a lot of fun, and I really like that he gets to be gay, but not necessarily the like flamboyant characters that we know him for. The first episode kind of made me laugh reluctantly. Like, I would laugh and then groan at the same time, like, ugh, you got me, I can't believe it. But the second episode with Deb's lesbian barbecue made me think, like, wow, am I a lesbian stereotype? I mean, like, an adorable backyard and colorful lesbian friends, trivia with a question about the Nagano Olympics, and questions about cars and, like, being a wife guy. I mean, it's basically, like, lesbian goals, right? I also really liked Twink's backstory and history with Cirque du Soleil. You can tell that the writing staff is full of people who really understand and appreciate the kind of queer in-jokes that queer people have with each other. And the winks and nods to gay and lesbian culture specifically are really fun to watch and pick out.
Yeah, it's clear that the calls are coming from inside the house when it comes to this show. And I almost didn't mention the backlash that the first 90-second trailer got, because ultimately that was a tempest in a big gay teacup, because, I mean, it's Twitter being Twitter, right? It's an instant reaction to 90 seconds of 5 hours of content, and it's ultimately it ends up being just noise. Or did it? What did you think, Serena?
I went into this with my expectations pretty level. I mean, two words, Wanda Sykes. I was on board.
Oh, yeah.
And I think she did a fantastic job out of the whole voice cast. Like, anything she wants to voice, I'm in. I expect this to be kind of like breezy and fun. And I said, this is probably not going to be the be-all end-all of queer rep and media. And it did both of those things. It was not the be-all end-all of queer rep and media. Nope. And yeah, it was pretty fun. I think it does a really good job in the first episode of putting you on the same page of like what it's going to be doing. There's a great joke. They have a spy car that's disguised as a Subaru. And Wanda Sykes' character, Deb, says that the car is preloaded with Tracy Chapman's entire discography, making it, wink, wink, a fast car.
There you go.
The body is a 2006 Subaru Outback, and on the inside, it can drive, it can fly. Plus, it's preloaded with Tracy Chapman's entire discography, so you know it's a fast car.
Who's Tracy Chapman?
I think he's a senator.
So already it's saying, like, this show, yes, is about queer people, but that, like, queer people don't understand all of each other's references and that there's, like, generational differences between queer people as well. And so I feel like it did a really good job right off the bat of saying, like, there are going to be a lot of jokes in this show and you are not necessarily going to get all of the jokes, and that's on purpose. I was, like, rolling on the floor laughing at the lesbian barbecue episode, and a lot of those jokes really hit. I mean, monologuing the Marissa Tomei bit from My Cousin Vinny, I was like, yep, that one's for me.
It's a trick question, because Chevy didn't make a 327 in 55. The 327 didn't come out till 63. And it wasn't offered in the Bel Air with a four-barrel carb till 64. However, in 1964, the correct ignition timing would be 4 degrees before top dead center.
It's kind of like a baseline entry into fun, queer animation. It's not going to be an edgy avant-garde show. This is just a fun show, and I appreciate it for being that.
I mean, that's a great point, Serena. Like, queerness looks like a monoculture from the outside, but as soon as you take a step inside it, it is clearly not, and a lot of references aren't going to hit everywhere. And speaking of references, I went into this show thinking, oh, we're going to get Archer, but queer, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, it's unfair to compare it, of course, but I mean, there's a lot of similarities. Both of them are about spies. Both of them have a kind of a 60s design vibe. Both of them feature an older woman with a Susan Sontag skunk stripe as kind of like the leader mentor. And Archer is a show I love dearly, but I think even its most ardent devotees would say that you would never call that show warm and fuzzy. That's not the vibe it's going for. Its characters are joke delivery machines, and the jokes come fast and furious, and it's willing to throw its characters under the bus for the sake of a good joke, and I respect that about it. You know, I have a desiccated husk where my heart should be, so that's what I like. It has some of the archness of 30 Rock, another show that maybe loves its jokes more than it loves its characters as characters. And also, this is also unfair, but I expected this show to be even more caustic and sharp tongue and arch, because it's coming from so many queer creators, and that's a thing we do. It is the way of my people. I'm sorry, that's just true. So, and also given the premise, right? The premise is that here's a group of queers who've been marginalized within a homophobic system. I expected a good old-fashioned bit of gay outrage, right? To kind of mm-hmm. drive this series. What we got is something that is much gentler and warmer. The jokes come, and many of the jokes are funny, as you mentioned, but it's not a fusillade of gags. And again, in scenes where jokes would go, there's instead all this room to spend with two or more characters just kind of finding a moment, finding an emotional beat or some kind of characterizing moment between them. At one point, there was a group hug, and I was like, what show am I watching here? Do you all agree with that? It's a strangely warmer show than you thought it might be?
For sure. It's funny that there are all these comparisons to Archer and stuff, because Archer was not necessarily a show that I enjoyed very much. I think sometimes shows like that can feel just a little too mean for me mm-hmm. because I am soft-hearted or whatever. And I expected this show to be meaner to its characters, and it wasn't. And I liked that, you know, there was a throwaway line, I think it was from Deb, who says something like, yeah, we're gay, found families, blah, blah, blah. We should stick with our own. And I really liked that throwaway line because it's nodding to the fact that queer people are people too, and we also have real and messy emotions about the people that we should be helping, right? And mm-hmm. there were more lessons learned in the show than I thought that there would be. I thought it would just kind of be this like arch joke machine, like you said, Glenn. And it turned out that, you know, these characters learn and change. And the show is very clearly setting them up to change and develop even from the very first episode, which I appreciated seeing. And it made me think, okay, maybe I do want to spend time with these characters and see how they'll grow from here. Like, I think Mary's journey feels very much like he's starting from a point of, I've got to be the best gay ever, and I've got to prove myself. And as the series goes on, it's kind of like he's realizing that his team is the thing that keeps him going, and that approval in the system is not really the whole point of his existence.
And that's a function of it being such a serialized show, which I also didn't expect. I expected it to be kind of episode of the week. Serena, did you make anything of the tone? Did it strike you as surprising in any way?
Yeah, I think they straddle a really fine line of being overly sentimental and, you know, not being too arch mm-hmm. like Archer. there's a running gag. It seemed like every episode somebody would start to monologue about what it means to be queer and then get cut off. And I found that extremely entertaining. Yeah, you put a bunch of queer people in a room and somebody's going to start whipping out the waterworks and, you know, monologuing. There's always one. Yeah, I really enjoyed the tone. I think it really did give its characters room to breathe. Like, I think Twink especially at the beginning came off a little... I mean, it's in the name. I think they didn't put a lot of thought and effort into that design. And then that character had the most development over the show and surprised me in a lot of ways. And so as the plot develops and extends multiple episodes, the characters grow too. And I thought that was really good writing.
And I was trying to figure out why the show had the tone that it did. And I just attributed it automatically to Michael Shore's influence, because after all, he is the sweetest guy in Hollywood, right? He's the guy behind shows like The Good Place and Rutherford Falls and Parks and Rec. But then, you know, if you think about it for even a second, Gabe Liedman wrote on a lot of shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Pen 15, which also have that kind of central emotional truth to them. And I think what we might be dealing with instead is the knowledge on the creator's part that when you start your characters off as such broad types, broad stereotypes even, and your goal is to make us actually care about them as opposed to have them just be joke machines or as opposed to have them just be offensive, you have to bang them together against each other to kind of wear them down and abrade away those hard edges so you can show us that they are real characters, they have inner lives, and they have inner conflicts. And it had me thinking about how this show uses stereotypes. I mean, yes, when stereotypes are employed by, just asserted without thinking, by those seeking to keep marginalized groups out of the room, right? Mm-hmm. That's when they're toxic. But in the hands of a marginalized group, if it's done well, stereotypes can be deployed usefully. They can act as Trojan horses. They can sneak us past the defenses of a bigoted system to get us in the room. Now, that's never ideal, right? You always want to be welcomed with open arms. It's just not the way it works. So when they're thoughtfully exploited, even the broadest stereotypes, I think, can help undermine the prejudices and the hatred that they seem on the surface to embody. I don't know if that makes me an apologist for this show, but I think that's the impulse I see here at work, the way this show develops these characters. And it doesn't work all the time. I mean, yes, y'all mentioned the lesbian jokes. Some of those lesbian jokes about how lesbians shack up quickly were dated in the 80s when I saw them at Evening at the Improv, right? So it's not a uniform every joke works. There's a mix here.
Yeah, and I think the jokes go by so quickly. There's such a nice pattern and pacing of the jokes that if one doesn't land for you, it passes by really quickly and you can kind of move on. There were jokes about weight and Twink wanting to be really skinny that I could have really done without. There's some fat shaming in the show that just kind of passed by and they felt like little pebbles as opposed to stones being thrown. There are so many jokes in the show that if one doesn't land, it's fine because another one will make you laugh.
I think speaking of the, you know, the size and the shape of the characters, I think the show could have done a lot better of a job of like putting more people in the room, even like the animated room itself. I think there's a lot of sameness to the characters that I found a little frustrating. I mean, queerness contains multitudes, I think, aside from like, yes, Deb's our lesbian, like Mary is our gay man. I mean, there really wasn't much other representation besides that. Like, there was no, like, bisexual character. There wasn't, I don't think, a trans character. I just felt like this was kind of the baseline, and I kind of expected even, like, the background characters all looked and presented themselves in kind of the same way. Mm-hmm. The women were femme, the men were, you know, mask. You know, everybody kind of looked the same, designed shape-wise, and kind of expected a little bit more on that front from a show explicitly about queerness. I'm kind of like, my new up-in-arms thing is that I like want to see more butch representation in media. I'm like, why is everybody so scared of butches? I mean, I know why, patriarchy, but I mean, I was thinking particularly of like, just like the biggest blockbuster lesbian films the last 5 years. And I get how blockbuster lesbian film is still a novelty and like, we can appreciate it for that. But like, you know, your Carols, your Portrait of Lady on Fires, your Ammonites, they're all like, you know, white cis ladies falling in love. And, you know, I was hoping that there'd be more people of color represented in this cast. And I mean, they're in LA and they don't think they have like a single Latinx, Latina character. And I found that crazy. I'm hoping if there's a second season that they bring in more characters who speak to a broader variety of the queer experience.
Speaking of representation, One of the things I really liked about this show is that, you know, I mentioned you have to bang these characters together. These characters bang. I love that these queer folks are not neutered. They have sex. They have sex on screen. There is full frontal. I find cartoon full frontal very, very funny. I don't know why.
You know, as I was watching the show, I couldn't help but think of Sean Hayes as an actor. I know him as Jack from Will and Grace. That's a pretty iconic gay character. And, you know, I've read that Hayes has expressed regret over being closeted, being coy over his sexuality for so long. And I felt like, you know, that was reflected in at least the beginning part of Mary's journey, right? That Mary comes out as soon as he graduates from Spy College, as soon as Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed, and it ruins his life because of a homophobic system. And that was the fear for actors like Sean Hayes in that time period when he was on network TV, and is a reality and a fear for a lot of people in this world for whom being gay gets them sidelined or mistrusted. And I liked that Mary is just consistently competent in the show, despite all the, you know, cartoon shenanigans, because it shows that it's because he's gay that he is mistrusted and sidelined, and really kind of reinforcing that this is a reality for people and this is a real fear for people, even in a place like West Hollywood could exist.
Right. Right.
I guess that's what takes the show from being just broad stereotype to actually representing something about the queer experience. And that's really what I want to see in a show about queer people. It doesn't necessarily need to be my queer experience, but I like to see queer experiences and queer people. And I know people who are like some of these characters, and I like being able to see them bang against each other and bang each other.
Well said.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Q-Force. Find us at Facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. Thanks to you both for being here. This was great.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn.
One last thing before we go. We're going to be talking about The Sopranos, and we want your questions. You can email us a voice memo with your question to PCHH@NPR.org. Again, you can send us a voice memo with your question to PCHH@NPR.org. That brings us to the end of our show. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all tomorrow.